translation is from Rosemary. Rosemary Sim.
Today I'll be talking about the Uranus Pluto squares that we are currently experiencing during the years 2012 to 2015. I hope to be able to bring a new perspective to this well-worn subject matter. I'll be looking at these squares from a holistic and broad perspective, with an emphasis on synod cycles, and in particular I'll be looking at the planet Chiron and how Chiron is integral to the current pattern. Interestingly, throughout the period of the Uranus-Pluto squares, there is a sextile between Pluto and Chiron, and for most of this time period, there is also a semi-sextile between Uranus and Chiron, so that in five of the seven exact squares of Uranus and Pluto, Chiron forms a minor aspect pattern with them, which the Hoopers call a small learning triangle. The apex planet in this triangle, which here is Chiron and Pisces, is said to be characterised by dissatisfaction with an external situation, something we can certainly see being played out within the current economic crisis. Chiron is therefore integral to the process of change that we are currently undergoing collectively. As well as being involved with this particular Uranus-Pluto synod cycle, Chiron can more generally be said to be a key to the outer planets. A primary aspect of Chiron's role is that he's a mediator between the two realms of planets, those within the orbit of Saturn and those from Uranus outwards. Saturn represents the walls of the structures and known self, and also the tribal or social system with its rules and values, whereas the outer planets relate to deep unconscious forces which become particularly apparent in historical, political, and wider cultural events. Jung termed this realm the collective unconscious, but in traditional tribal cultures, it was seen as the spirit world. In these elder cultures, there would be someone whose role it would be to cross the threshold that marked the boundary between what was safe and known to the tribe and what was out there in the other world, which could be hostile or indifferent to human interests. This was done to keep open a relationship between ourselves and these other forces in order to negotiate with them or seek healing. Known by many different names in different cultures, but often known by the Siberian term shaman today, this figure is archetypically connected with Chiron. Astronomically, Chiron's orbit is highly elliptical. His path does not cross into the outer planet's domain, but he does get very close to the orbit of Uranus, as if he were venturing out to meet him. His orbit then draws closer to the Sun and comes within the orbit of Saturn, so sometimes he comes back inside the boundary of the tribe, as it were, bringing understanding to his people of what lies beyond. Like the shaman, he is the mediator for us between what we know and what is out there and threatening us. When we do not access this Chironian consciousness, we are more likely to see what is going on in our world through the eyes of Saturn, with fear, with a desire for stasis and control, and with blame and judgment. This was supposed to say Pluto in Capricorn. It's obviously changed the text. We can see how this Saturnian perspective is being played out in the popular response and in the media coverage of the economic crisis. People are finding their living standards squeezed and want things to stay as they were or return to how they were as quickly as possible. The banks are being blamed for gambling too much, and the governments are blamed for spending too much. But what is not acknowledged in the popular discourse is their reasons for doing this. Both banks and governments were basing their economic policies on a notion of endless economic growth. During the period when Pluto was in Sagittarius, this was taken to an extreme, as the archer's optimistic gaze toward future horizons maintained a confidence that the boom would continue indefinitely. Pluto's transition into Capricorn in 2008 brought us the cold, hard realities of this winter sign, and suddenly being debt-ridden and without reserves for this long astrological winter season to come didn't seem so clever. In the blame game, the Conservatives blame Labour spending, Labour blame the Conservatives' austerity measures, the UK blames the EU and the euro crisis, and the EU blames the Anglo-Saxon banking culture in the UK and US. But if we look at Pluto and Chiron from a more holistic Chironian perspective, Pluto and Capricorn, it's less easy to single people out to blame. For various reasons, such as the increasing instability of weather patterns due to global warming, leading to food shortages, amongst other problems, the decline of Western dominance with the resultant insecurities and shifting global power relations, and a surge in the global population, the belief in ever-increasing abundance that underpinned our debt-based economy is being shaken. Around the world, there has been increasing climate instability and food shortages, and the UN has said that in 2013, the situation could reach crisis point, as it did back in 2008, the year of Pluto's ingress into Capricorn, when world grain prices abruptly doubled. As a result, exporting countries began restricting exports, and importing countries panicked and turned to buying or leasing land in other countries to produce food for themselves. Lester Brown, an environmental analyst and president of the Earth Policy Institute in Washington, predicts ever-increasing food prices, leading to political instability, spreading hunger, and potentially a catastrophic breakdown in food supply. He states, "An unprecedented period of world food security has come to an end. The world has lost its safety cushions and is living from year to year. This is the new politics of food scarcity. We are moving into a new food era, one in which it is every country for itself." And this, in the Astro Gadgets. Some of those who are disenfranchised by the Pluto and Capricorn land grab and resource hoarding may lash out at the system that is excluding them. The England riots in August 2011 saw an eruption of Uranus and Aries frustration as alienated young people engaged in several days and nights of anarchy and what some pundits called violent shopping, a phrase which epitomises the dark heart of consumer society and the global liberal economic system which underpins it, which is so brutal in terms of its human and social cost. The image of the Reeves family business in Croydon up in flames became a symbol of the riots, as Pluto and Capricorn tradition, represented by a family business that had been passed from father to son over many generations, was subsumed by the Uranus in Aries fire of a rebellion that seemed to lash out indiscriminately. In reaction to the chaos that erupted over those days and nights, many people adopted a dehumanising perspective towards the rioters, with both victims and tabloid journalists describing them as animals. Extremely harsh prison sentences were handed out even for minor offences such as the handling of stolen goods or taking a bottle of pop from an already looted shop, which went way beyond normal sentencing guidelines. The former chair of the Criminal Bar Association, Paul Mendel QC, suggested that the courts themselves were getting caught up in a kind of collective hysteria. When we take a Saturnian approach of blame to the situation, we either scapegoat politicians and bankers when we side with Uranus and Aries, or stigmatise people as benefit scroungers or animals when we side with Pluto and Capricorn. Since this is a waxing square in cardinal signs, we may be called to action because we are dealing with an action-oriented aspect in action-oriented signs. But the soft aspects that both planets make to Chiron in Pisces reminds us that we can nonetheless witness both sides in the conflicts arising from this square and hold them in our compassionate awareness. and this is Chiron in Pisces. In David Cameron's speech after the 2011 England riots, he said, "There is no them and us, there is us. We are all in this together." These words became a bitterly ironic refrain as the brunt of the economic crisis continues to be borne by the poorest. But these words do express the truth of Chiron in Pisces. Like it or not, like the two fishes in the glyph of Pisces, both sides in this crisis are yoked together, both the wealthy and the poor in our society, and the suffering southern bloc in the EU and the resentful northern bloc. Moreover, the entire global system of food supply is bound together, and a bad harvest in one country affects prices globally, which to us means a squeeze in living standards, but to many in the world can mean starvation. The Chiron in Pisces wound of the bound fishes evokes a sense of powerlessness that is a consequence of our fragile and intricately interconnected world economy, as we all see as we look at the seeding moment of this Uranus-Pluto synod cycle. Uranus conjunct Pluto in Aries, Venus 3, and Leo here. And this is the Uranus Pluto conjunction of Virgo in the mid-sixes. These current squares are the waxing squares of the Uranus Pluto synod cycle that began in 1965-66, when the two planets were conjunct in the sign of Virgo. This seizing moment in Virgo describes that which will be unfolding throughout the 140 years following it. And with the current squares, we are at a critical juncture of this long cycle. Even more than that, the seizing of this new energy in the mid-60s in Virgo is of great historical importance because the previous five Uranus-Pluto synod cycles, going all the way back to the year 1343, in the fire signs, Aries and Leo. During those six centuries, we developed the capacity to dominate nature through our Cartesian and Darwinian model of science, and the aggressive expansion of European empires across the globe brought with it genocide and the transatlantic slave trade in the most brutal expressions of the warrior and monarchical archetypes of Aries and Leo. The final waning square of the last of these five synod cycles appears in the early 1930s. This coincided with the rise of Nazism, the last stand in its most extreme and toxic form of this old ideal of might is right. So this new beginning of the Uranus-Pluto synod cycle in Virgo represents a very profound change in what Uranian-Plutonian themes such as progress, scientific knowledge, and social transformation signify. Rather than more of the same conquest over nature and over others, Virgo asks us to see that we are a part of nature and that all parts of humanity and of the ecosphere form an interconnected whole. This change is also amplified by the fixed star Regulus entering Virgo last year, moving from the sign of Leo where it had been for over 2,000 years. Regulus indicates power and glory, and its move into Virgo echoes the meaning of this shift of the Uranus-Pluto conjunction in Virgo after so many cycles in Aries and Leo. We become powerful now when we take our place within the greater whole rather than battling to take a position of dominance. In the first few years of the new Uranus-Pluto synod cycle, a new vision of our relationship with the Earth began to emerge. James Lovelock started defining the ideas that would become the Gaia hypothesis in September 1965, although it was in the late 1970s that his ideas became popularised around the time of the discovery of Chiron. The Gaia hypothesis proposes that organisms interact with their inorganic surroundings on Earth to form a self-regulating complex system that contributes to maintaining the conditions for life on the planet. This is a profoundly Virgo vision of the Earth, in which she is self-sufficient, complete in herself, and her ecosphere is intricately woven from many different strands of life, all of which contribute to the whole. It stands in sharp relief to the Darwinian model the fierce competition and survival of the fittest, which emerged shortly after the previous synodic conjunction of Uranus and Pluto in Aries, which occurred in 1850. The Apollo moon landings in the late 60s, early 70s brought us literally a new vision of the Earth, as seen in this famous 1972 shot of Earth from space, known as the Blue Marble. Being able to see the delicacy and beauty of our planet was a moving experience for many, and clarified the importance of cultivating a sense of care towards the Earth. The Uranus-Pluto conjunctions in 1965-66 fell in the 17th and 18th degrees of Virgo. The Sabian symbols for these degrees are a volcano in eruption and a Ouija board. A volcano in eruption is an image terrifying to human beings, as it represents the destructive power of nature. Yet it can also bring renewal after the eruption, as a new ecosystem takes the place of the old. The Hawaiian goddess of volcanoes, Pele, is known as woman who devours the land and is seen as both destroyer and creator. This symbol reminds us of the fragility of our hitherto relatively stable ecosystem, which is transitioning to a much more unpredictable climate, erupting in more frequent natural disasters. From a shamanic perspective, we may see this as the rage of the dishonoured Earth goddess, whose boundaries have been violated, and who defends her Virgo and integrity with eruptions of fire and flood. A Ouija board is designed to look for answers through the medium of a movable indicator or planchette, which two or more people place their fingers upon. None of the participants act upon the counter consciously, but their combined energy mysteriously enables another energy to come through, which may be supernatural or may be the group unconscious of those involved. This suggests a new model of group relationship or synergy. In 1965, the merger treaty was signed in Brussels, bringing together a number of European institutions into a single institutional structure. It is seen by many as the real beginning of what is now the EU. The name Ouija comes from the French for yes and the German for yes. The EU was built around the partnership of France and Germany. It was conceived as a win-win or yes-yes system, in a sense, for these two old enemies, where power can be sought by strengthening the many parts of the whole, rather than having a conqueror and a defeated party, ending in carnage on both sides. Yet all parties involved in a Ouija board scenario are passive in relation to the planchette, and so with this sort of relationship, there is also the danger that neither side get what they want, as almost acquiesce to the mysterious supernatural force or group synergy. Sorry, I was using Astro Gadgets, it's not going to be okay there, but that was Saturn, and this is Uranus Pluto. Just as it is now, Chiron was also in Pisces during the Uranus Pluto conjunctions of 65 to 66, and along with Saturn was in opposition to their conjunction. So there is a counterbalance or cost to the radical revisioning of power brought by this Uranus Pluto synod cycle in Virgo. As we all integrate, power becomes diffused throughout the system, and everyone feels disempowered as a result. Chiron in Pisces describes the bitter resignation and apathy many feel as national democracies become increasingly impotent in the face of EU bureaucrats and the infamous Troika. This Chironian powerlessness and frustration keys into the Uranus-Pluto square in the cardinal signs of Aries and Capricorn. And just as at the last Uranus-Pluto square in cardinal signs, which was the waning square of the 1930s, we find an increase in nationalism and a severe testing of the projects of European integration. We can also see the current aspect pattern in which Chiron is involved in the Uranus-Pluto squares as a period of time in which three synod cycles are interacting. As well as being the waxing square of the Uranus-Pluto cycle, we are also experiencing the waning semi-sextile of the current Uranus-Chiron cycle and the waxing sextile of the current Pluto-Chiron cycle. We can look at these junctures within the course of these two other synod cycles to help us contextualise the current Uranus-Pluto square. We are currently experiencing the waning semi-sextile of the Uranus-Chiron synod cycle, which began in 1898 and ends in 2042. The seeding moment of this cycle was the conjunction in the fifth degree of Sagittarius. Its Sabian symbol is an owl up in a tree. In 1898, the world looked forward to a new century as Chiron and Uranus met in future-oriented Sagittarius. It was a time of great optimism and technological advancement, but also anxiety, as social and cultural change sped up and socialism and the avant-garde were subversive to the traditional order. We might see the image of an owl up in a tree as relating to the established order of society with the ruling class at the top on an increasingly precarious perch, particularly since the opposite degree symbol at 5 Gemini is a radical magazine. The early 20th century was characterised by communist and fascist revolutions which overturned the old European elites in many countries and was followed by 2 cataclysmic world wars. The Cold War that followed the Second World War involved espionage on a global scale. McCarthyism, the Stasi and the KGB all evoke the watchful owl at the top of the tree, able to turn its head in every direction and with powerful night vision. The full moon or opposition of the Uranus-Chiron synod cycle occurs in the mid-60s at the same time as the Uranus-Pluto conjunction. It was during this period that the protest movement reached a crescendo, spurred on by one of the bloodiest conflicts of the so-called Cold War, the Vietnam War. So now we have reached the waning semi-sextile of this cycle, the time of breaking things down to the essence of what has been learnt during the last turbulent century. Many modern protest movements today, like transition towns and permaculture initiatives, have their focus more on building a future community rather than fighting the powers that be. The seed is being planted for the new vision that will emerge with the next Uranus-Chiron conjunction around 2042. Yet we can also see the aimless, self-undoing type energy that can be associated with a waning semi-sextile with its 12th house connotations in the chaos of the England riots. In the riots, every kind of perceived authority was attacked indiscriminately as the owl's power grows ever weaker in this final waning phase. The Pluto-Chiron sextile, this is involved in our aspect pattern, is in contrast a waxing sextile of its synod cycle, which began during the last couple of days of 1999. It also began in Sagittarius, but in the 12th degree, and its Sabian symbol is a flag that turns into an eagle that crows. Once again, we have a synodic conjunction in the future-oriented sign of Sagittarius, just a day or two before we moved into a new century. This time it was not only a new century that approached, but the start of a new millennium. Pluto and Chiron described the dark and ominous fears that humanity was projecting onto the future at that time, such as the millennium bug, which was supposed to have the potential to bring down our entire technologically dependent civilization, and the apocalyptic paranoia fed in part by a stream of Hollywood disaster movies. These fears of an impending attack, however, came true less than 2 years into the synod cycle when the Twin Towers were struck by Islamic terrorists. The bitter power struggle that ensued as the US and her allies invaded first Afghanistan and then Iraq was not untainted by the desire for vengeance that Chiron and Pluto together often inspire. The Sabian symbol for this synod cycle, a flag that turns into an eagle that crows, is highly suggestive of the American flag and its emblematic eagle. That the eagle crows is an interesting pun, since to crow means to exult loudly as over another's defeat, and yet a crow is a smaller and more common bird than an eagle. The eagle is a bird of prey, lofty and regal. That the eagle is reduced to crowing suggests an insecurity about its authority and a need to brazenly and aggressively assert its dominance. On the one hand, we can see this as an expression of a decline in America's unquestioned supremacy in the world. Yet the symbol also relates to many nations' reactions to the way in which the sovereignty of all nations is being undermined in our increasingly interconnected world. Now at the sextile, we can see this new quality of Pluto-Chiron fear and survival anxiety in clearer expression in the increase in nationalist sentiment in many European countries. The Scottish referendum next year, the rise of the new right in Europe, the English Defence League, and of course the popularity of UKIP, are all indications that there is a growing nationalist current within the zeitgeist. Yet if we see this Pluto-Chiron synod cycle in relation to the far more significant shift represented by the mid-60s Uranus-Pluto conjunction in Virgo after so many cycles of Aries in Leo, we can see that this reactionary current is not as fundamental as the shift towards Virgo and integration. Both images of the owl up in the tree and the flag turning into an eagle are strikingly similar in that in both, a bird of prey is at the top of a tree or pole. This calls to mind the world tree, which is found in many traditions. In the Norse world tree Yggdrasil, an eagle perches in its uppermost branches, while the dragon Nidhogg gnaws at its root. This tension between the forces of dominant order at the top of the tree and the chthonic forces of chaos and decay beneath it is a dialectical vision requiring Aryan and Leonan might to uphold the natural order. But with the shift into a Virgoan revisioning of our place in the world, we are remembering ourselves as integral parts of the great world tree, rather than as a paragon of superiority perched at the top. This relocating of power and of conscious awareness down from the heights and into the embodied experience of being a small part contributing to a greater whole is not without its costs. Chiron's deep involvement in this transformation shows us that this is a painful process, one in which we are all involved, as Chiron mediates these collective outer planet energies for us, bringing them to us in ways which can be both wounding and healing. But ultimately, his transit in Pisces at both the conjunction and the waxing square of the Uranus-Pluto synod cycle provides for us a gateway of compassionate awareness through which we may navigate these challenging times.
Anybody, we've got time for maybe one or two questions. Has anybody got a question for you?